Your skin is clammy. There's grit behind your eyeballs. A solitary owl hoots. The world lays creepily silent.
Children of the night.
Then a shadowy figure emerges from the darkness.
The problem is 99% of the planet doesn't know who he is.
Who is that guy?
A rebel. A guardian of everything that's fair in this dog-eat-dog world. One man with an opinion, a studio hotline, and 5 hours to kill.
Let's do this thing.
Bad of the ball. Around Australia on the Triple M Network. Triple M! Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Bunner.
3353 is the number. Let's talk. Let's get the party started. G'day, George.
Oh, hi, mate. How are you?
Very good, George. I need to ask, whereabouts are you?
I'm from Sydney.
Okay. And why are you up?
I'm up on the truck.
Good on you.
Yeah.
So, I'm guessing you're interested in this driverless truck idea.
I'm not very interested at all. I see that it's taking jobs away from the Australian worker.
Yeah.
And one thing is, what's going to be left? We lost Holden, we lost Ford, Electrolux. And trucking is one of the major employers in Australia, whether it's from a light rigid or a semi or a B double or road train. It's the lifeline of the Australian community and the working force.
Yeah.
And we're losing that touch. You go to McDonald's or you go to Woolies, you know, you got all the automated.
That's
right.
You're
taking jobs away. And every time we had union meetings at work, we always had the area organiser talk about the safe rates campaign. I said, there is more important issues. I brought up the driverless truck. This is about a year ago.
You actually brought it up at a union meeting, did you?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. What did the union delegates say? And what are their thoughts on the driverless truck situation?
They're more interested in this fair rates campaign than anything. I said, what's the point if the federal government signed the fair rate for minimum wage when there's no drivers to sign it because it'd be all automated?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not worth the paper it's printed on. There's more important issues than a minimum rate. So I wanted to bring up real issues that affected the working class. But every time I brought that up, they were not interested in negotiating that. They're more interested in their political agenda.
Yeah. Do you think it will happen?
Yes, I do, yeah.
You think driverless trucks will happen? They're calling it platooning, where they get four long trucks linked together electronically.
Yeah, they got the technology. Even when I used to go to the Fair Work Commission to hear other workers that got dismissed before, you had commissioners bring it up. They're already using driverless trucks in the mines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. Funny you should mention the self-checkout at this shop, yeah. At the the supermarket. All these calls there, yeah, they've all got it now. You still see a lot of people queuing up at the register, don't you? Because they want the conversation, the interaction, or they don't know how to use the technology. I don't know.
My biggest thing, I reckon, it's about a 50-50. A lot of it, they want that human touch.
Yeah.
They can relate to a person.
Mm.
The way they're going, if everything's going automated, there's going to be no jobs left. If there's no jobs, the social welfare system's going to collapse. Because how are we going to pay our mortgage? How are we going to put food on our table if there's no jobs?
Well, if there's no jobs, where's the tax base coming from? Where is the revenue going to come from?
That's correct. Without revenue, you don't have a country. Who's going to pay the country to run? You're going to have full anarchy on the street.
I tell you what, George, you're making sense here. I tell you what we'll do. Why don't we put a call out to the Triple M audience this morning? What other areas of employment are under threat from automation, I wonder?
Warehousing. I even talked to the guys that unload the trucks with the forklifts.
Mm.
A lot of their big companies are talking about having full automated, it unloads the truck from the back.
Right.
And it does the put-aways on the high reaches. That means that the packers and stormers are going to be the thing of the past at major warehouses.
Yeah.
And warehousing is a large, in a transport community, one of the largest employers of people that don't have truck licenses. You got forkies.
Yep.
Yeah, not everyone can drive a semi or a B-double. You need a lot of experience before anyone let you drive a semi or a B-double.
Yeah, all right. Look, very, very good point, and I'm glad you brought it up. 133353. What other areas of employment are under threat? Where else could automation completely take over? George makes a very, very good point. If the whole world becomes automated, who's working? The technicians that invent the technology, are they guaranteed work? You can't automate that. What jobs can you not automate? I couldn't automate Jess. You couldn't automate what you do, right? You talk to people and you run this program, right? But there are radio stations that appear to be manned and they're not. And it's sounded, I reckon, the death knell of learning your craft in radio in the bush. Because once upon a time you had real announcers at the radio station late at night. It's where I started my announcing career. I started as a panel operator in the city, but I moved to the bush and started as a nighttime, geez, I've come a long way, haven't I? A nighttime broadcaster on a station that had a real live announcer there between 6 at night and midnight. And at midnight, you played the news, and out of the news, you played the national anthem, and a station closed you and you turned the transmitter off. And then you went and washed up the coffee cups and put the garbage out. It was glamorous work. But at least it was work. Now most radio stations either take satellite programming or they voice track. There are stations in metropolitan markets, like Smooth FM, for example, whose only live shift, I think, is the breakfast shift. And the rest, it's automated. You put your voice tracks into a computer. It tells you what time that voice track will go to where, so you can actually give a time call. And it's all automated. What other areas of employment could we lose to automation? 133353, where is the future, I wonder? Thank you so much for your call, George.
No, thanks a lot, mate. Thanks once again.
Okay, and keep your eye out for some funny bumper stickers. I want to run a competition, okay?
Okay, thanks for having me.
Thank you for calling. 133353. Michael, g'day.
G'day, Luke. How you doing?
I'm very good, Michael. What have you got for me?
Okay, I'm one of the lucky people who had these heard that big crack of the penis during sex.
You broke it.
Well, it was a big crack and it definitely bent. And luckily,
no.
It was painful. But thankfully, it bounced straight back and we had a bit of a laugh about it. I was sore for a couple of days, but yep, it does happen and it is not comfortable.
Did you? So you bent it like?
Yeah.
Was it right angles?
Well, I didn't actually see it in the bent position because it sort of retracted pretty quick. But I felt a bend and I felt the crack and there was a big yelp. That was for sure.
Oh, how long till you could recover?
Well, thankfully, I recovered pretty quickly. But I would guess that the bigger you are, the harder it falls, I guess. Or the bigger a bend, so that probably bigger guys would have more trouble. But luckily, I don't fall with that category, so I recovered pretty quick. But I've got a couple of other little quick ones for you, too, regarding incidents in the bedroom.
Yeah, go on.
The second one was with a girlfriend at the time, and we were playing in the shower, and she was giving me fellatio. She got a bit carried away, and she drew on it like a straw. And next thing you know, it was like siphoning petrol out of a tank. And next thing you know, blood's coming out of my cock.
No! I don't. Why did I start this conversation?
Oh, mate, that was painful. That sort of was a clutch your groin, collapse on your knees, and stagger out of bed. And just luckily I was already in the shower, and there was the mess was contained.
Why did I start this?
Because you're a dirty old man.
Be that as it may, I saw the article on news.com.au, and I thought you can break it, and I thought I'd explore this. Oh, but I don't want to hear that. Go on, give me one more.
Okay, the last one just happened recently, and it was on my own, and I was just having a little bit of fun on the internet, and next thing you know, I'm feeling like, I'm not coming, but I'm feeling wet, and I'm looked down, and I was literally, as well as the walls all around my room, were covered in blood, and I had to call an ambulance, and it was pretty scary. It was just blood had just sprayed everywhere. It was like a Dexter scene, and they couldn't work anything out at the hospital other than saying potentially a burst blood vessel. But it was scary.
What did you say to the ambo?
Well, when I rang them up, and because I sort of asked, and I said, well, I don't know if this is an emergency or not. I just don't know whether I should be driving in case I'm going to have to stay in hospital or anything. And said that, well, basically I was masturbating, and next thing you know, when I wasn't orgasming, all of a sudden blood was just squirting everywhere. And I sort of hit the panic button a little, and I said, would you mind just telling the ambos to come in about 15 minutes, because I've got to have a shower and clean up first and pack a bag. And then I just expected, like, it was early morning, and I just expected a couple of male ambos to turn up, and I had left the door open and everything, but I was in the shower. Next thing you know, the female ambo walks in, and I'm naked and covered out of the shower. And, yep, so I said, well, you better go check the room. They said, oh, no, we don't really need it. I said, I think you better, because I don't know what's regarded as a lot of blood loss or not, so you better go have a look and see, because it basically was... If you could put yourself on a desk with a corner of a wall, a left wall, a right wall, and basically the left wall, the right wall, all above my head, everywhere was covered in blood, including me head to waist in blood. And, yeah, it was... so they went and had a look, and they said, yeah, let's get you to hospital. So,
Jesus.
Yeah, so it was a bit... Yeah. So I ended up with an endoscopy, and I forgot what the other procedure is, where you get the tube put up and all the tests and stuff, and... So they couldn't work out what it was, but, yeah, it was a bit of a scary moment.
Can I just give you a little word of advice?
I don't know whether I should hear this or not, but go on.
Leave it alone for a while.
Well, I'm not that active, but it just seemed to be one of those moments.
Michael, I'm sorry, but south of the equator, it's nature's way of saying, give me a break.
Well, you could be right there, but I haven't had a problem since. But, yeah, it was, my GP thinks it was more just like a burst blood vessel. But anyway, guys, don't play with it too long and too hard.
Goodbye.
Make sure your girlfriend doesn't...
Okay, good. Got it.
Cheers, right, Luke.
Thank you, Michael.
Bye.
133353 is the telephone number. Why did I bring this up? What do you say after all that? What do you say? Turn away, look away now. 133353 is the number for those stations who have just joined us. Welcome along. We've got quite a few topics of conversation spinning around today. One of them is driverless trucks. Apparently they could be on our roads sooner than later. It makes me very nervous. I don't know how it can work. A caller that we had a little bit earlier said, anyone knows if you've got GPS, it drops out when you get to heavily treed areas or tunnels. How are these things going to work? Anyway, there is a thought from the New South Wales state government. They're exploring new technology that would make driverless trucks a reality. According to the Transport Minister, Andrew Constance, he said, certainly in terms of safety, we look at that first and foremost, it'll be a big change. He said, what we will see is over the next 15 to 20 years, a move from semi-autonomous vehicle functions in cars and trucks today to fully autonomous. A caller rang up earlier saying, and it was very true, George. What about all the jobs? Driverless trucks, sure. If it's possible. There's more jobs going, just like the jobs you see disappearing at Woolies and Coles on the fully automated checkouts. Can you think of other areas of employment that are going to be greatly diminished over the next few years because of automation? Kelly rang up. She delivers newspapers. She reckons her job will go one day. 133353 is the telephone number. We're talking about this dangerous rapist who was on the loose after taking off his GPS ankle tracker. His name is Damien Kennedy. Jailed for 9 years in 2008 for rape and assault with intent to commit rape. The 28-year-old was granted parole in January 2013 after completing a sex offender rehabilitation program. Well, that's dumb bugger all. He was being supervised under the Dangerous Prisoners Sexual Offenders Act, but he's now on the run. He's removed his monitor. He was living with his mum. He's heavily tattooed and considered a dangerous criminal. Apparently, he has a history of misbehaviour while on parole. repeatedly testing positive for drugs, particularly meth and marijuana. This bloke should not have been on parole. But here we go again. Here we go again. Let's feel sorry for the poor little diddums. He has a history of misbehaving on parole. Why was he on parole? Why was he on parole? He's described as being 171 centimetres tall. He weighs 125 kgs, fair complexion, shaven black hair. He has numerous tattoos all over his body, including Southside across his neck, a Chinese demon on his right shin, love and hate on his right inner forearm. He has runner, R-U-N-A, on his right knuckle and muck on his left knuckle. And he was on parole. There you go. On 3353, we received a horrific call in the first hour of the program this morning from a man who has had exactly this happen to him. I was reading online yesterday about a girl, a woman, who has recalled the horrifying moment she broke her model's or her model boyfriend's penis during sex. Megan Barker, 23, and partner Adam Francis, 24, were enjoying a steamy session in the bedroom when a harrowing rip sound interrupted their antics. She's told how the bedroom looked like a crime scene. She broke his knob. I didn't know you could do that. She broke it. It's taken 6 months to recover. But there you have it. Have you had a sex accident? Have you had to call the paramedics and been greatly embarrassed? What's gone terribly wrong for you? I don't know if after the last call, Michael, I don't know if I actually want to encourage more calls on this. Michael rang up and exactly that had happened to him, and he's had numerous other sex fails. Quite graphic. So if you're easily offended, turn away. I suggest turn away. Some graphic content may be coming your way on the radio this morning. God knows. 133353 is the telephone number. So lots to talk about this morning. Here's something else I'll throw into the mix. The city of Sydney is promising free weddings. The city of Sydney has proposed free wedding venues for same-sex couples. The council wants to make community facilities, halls and parks free for the first 100 days if marriage equality is legalised after the postal vote. Now, Clover Moore is the mayor of Sydney and she's very, very pro-vote yes. There are hundreds of thousands of dollars of advertising and banners and all sorts of things that's been spent on Clover Moore's yes initiative. However, another person who's equally positive towards the yes vote is Christine Forster, who is the sister of former Prime Minister Tony Abbott. She also is on council. And she has rejected the proposal. She says it's hypocritical. She said, "This has been a fight for equality before the law. And it's my belief that we can't ask for equality for ourselves and then deny it to others. It's also been about making marriage inclusive, not exclusive, and this motion flies in the face of that." I think she has a point. However, the council has said the idea is a practical way to combat discrimination, but then it's discriminating against same-sex marriage, isn't it? It's discrimination. You can't let same-sex marriages go ahead for free at public destinations without saying, well, the same will go for heterosexual marriage. The whole thing is about fighting discrimination, isn't it? Well, this is discriminatory. It's like quotas for women in the workforce, like the ADF had and other government departments. They've said, oh, we're only going to hire women because women have been discriminated against. Well, what are you doing? You're discriminating against men, all in the name of anti-discrimination. It's a bloody joke. I think Christine Forster, who is gay, lives in a gay relationship. She's very much pushing for the yes vote, but I think she has a point. If it's about a fight for equality before the law, you can't ask for equality on one hand and then deny it on the other. Anyway, we'll throw that into the mix. Plenty to talk about this morning. 133353 is the telephone number. You're listening to The Night Shift around the country and around the world on the Triple M network. You're listening to The Night Shift across Australia. My name is Luke, L-U-K-E. Yes, it is Boner, B-O-N-A. No, as somebody's emailed in, it's not Luke Broken Boner. They're funny, aren't they? They're funny. 133353. I was reading online the other day an article written by celebrity chef Matt Preston, and he was talking about 10 dishes that are completely unique to Australia. He said there are some things about Aussies the world will never understand, namely those foods we can't get enough of. It's hopeless trying to explain them. You just tuck in and be proud. Most Australians turn our noses up at things like 1,000-year-old eggs in China, the sludgy flesh of preserved Thai mountain crabs, or the men's toilets after a big Barnsley concert stink of durian fruit. But it begs the question, do Aussies love to eat? What do Aussies love to eat that no one else in the world gets? And there are some top contenders for the Aussie Foodie Hall of Shame. One of them is the salve. I love the salve. Australians have had a long love affair with the salve, battered or not. You go to the show, you have a battered salve, sold in carts in Melbourne's alleys as cutthroats 150 years ago. They were a street snack, slit and slathered in tomato sauce. We love them so much. We've given them a whole list of friendly names like Cheerios, Footy Franks, or the slightly more uncomfortable Little Boys. What about Devon? Hey, Devon. It is a local delicacy. A Devon sandwich with tomato sauce. The pie floater, or otherwise known as the dirty street pie, the dead horse. It's served on top of a soupy, mushy pea thing. Are we unique in Australia that we love smoked oysters? I love smoked oysters. Overseas, you have sardines or tuna, even crab in a tin. But canning oysters, is that uniquely Australian? Does that get eaten anywhere else? Fried dim sums, like the Chico roll. And if you're in Victoria, the potato cake. Now, the potato cake is a potato scallop. In other states, it's called a scallop. Love potato cakes. Love potato scallops. Got to have salt and it's got to have vinegar. God, my mouth's bloody watering. Oh, how Aussie is the vanilla slice? Chicken twisties. Vegemite. And my great love, pineapple. I will not eat a pizza if it doesn't have pineapple on it. Then there's the Lamington. Sponge cake in disguise. Can you name me an Aussie delicacy that is uniquely Australian that you haven't seen anywhere else in the world? What can't you do without? 133353. When Jess was a little girl, a wee little slip of a girl. Why have I forgot this accent? When Jess was a wee slip of a little girl, in her pleated skirt and her stockings and her hair tied back in braids, skipping off to primary school innocently, and she would have a Tupperware dish full of what?
Nothing that the other kids wanted.
Domardis? Oh, you don't call them domardis.
Vine leaves.
Vine leaves. Say it in Arabic for me. What is it?
We say wada ainab.
Wada ainab.
Which literally means vine leaves.
Yeah, but domardis.
Yeah.
Yeah, for those who don't
know.
Well,
ours are better, but yeah, go on.
What else did your mum make you?
Well, I'd usually bring leftovers, Lukey, often wrapped in Lebanese bread. And back then, no one had ever seen it before. So I sometimes was so embarrassed to eat my lunches in front of other people, I'd hide. And mum would wrap them in aluminium foil, you know, locking the freshness
of
the lamb and the falafels. And the girls would sometimes, there were these two bullies, and they would take my Lebanese dirty, long sandwiches off me and play sword fights with them.
Mm.
Now, look what everyone's eating, eh?
Everyone's eating your food now.
You're welcome. We gave you hummus. Thank me later.
What were the other kids eating that you wanted, though?
Oh, I would beg my mum for Vegemite on Wonder White. I just always wanted to taste Wonder White bread.
You know, because all the other kids were having Wonder White.
Yeah. I was like, how is it so white and fluffy? I just wanted roll-ups. We were never allowed roll-ups. We were never allowed Dunkaroos or the snacks. Orange juice was a treat in our house. So there were dark days, my friend.
Did you ever? Did your friends ever have Vital Wheats with the little holes,
yes,
and a Vegemite?
And all the kids would sit there squeezing the Vegemite and butter through it. And I was like, Mum, please. No, just walnuts and dates. That's all I got. Walnuts, dates, pistachios.
Really?
Yeah.
Walnuts, dates, and pistachios.
Ethnic snacks.
That's what you would take to school for a snack.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's great. But back then, I was jealous. I was a kid. I wanted what everyone else had.
Were you ever allowed to buy something at the tuck shop?
About once a month.
And what would you buy?
Oh, I'd go ham. I'd just go crazy. I loved that weird lasagna that they put in. I don't even know if it was legitimate lasagna, but you know how at your canteen, right, you could buy hot meals, but they were pre-packed. So they would outsource them and they probably were frozen and then they'd cook them in the canteen. There was this lasagna. I don't know what was in it. It also had spaghetti in it. And
no, we never had that.
So unhealthy. Loved it. Or a meat pie.
We never
burger.
Had. No, we never had. Oh, we had meat pies.
Mm, great foods.
Well, I went to Narrabeen Boys High. The number one thing that you would order at the tuck shop was a sausage roll bun. And basically it was a hamburger roll with a sausage roll put in it and sauce. That was it. You'd have that.
Mm.
That was the number one thing.
Back in my day, if you had $2 at the canteen line, you were king of the playground. Does $2 even buy you anything these days at the tuck shop?
Back in my day, you were king of the school for the day if your mum was on canteen duty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Priorities. You could skip the queue. You
got it for free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She'd give you a few extras.
Yeah.
Did you have Ovaltines?
No.
In your time?
No.
Oh, what an iconic treat.
133353, what can you name me and Jess an iconically Australian dish? It's got to be something you don't go overseas. Something when you travel, what do you miss?
Or what do you take for others to try?
Yeah. Vegemite's the number one. I can't stand Vegemite.
I love it.
I'm not a Vegemite person.
I always take Tim Tams. And then I show everyone how to do a Tim Tam slam and watch their mind being blown.
What's that?
What?
What's a Tim Tam slam?
You don't know what a Tim Tam slam is? Oh, my goodness. Okay. You get a Tim Tam. You bite one side of it, and then you bite the other.
The thin end.
Two of the thin ends.
Yeah.
You get a hot bevy, hot chocolate, recommended, and then you dunk it in and you drink your hot drink through the Tim Tam as if the Tim Tam is a straw.
Oh,
and
no.
The Tim Tam melts as it goes into your mouth. It is phenomenal.
My mind has just blown up.
I need you to try it and film you doing it.
What about my type 2 diabetes?
Oh, we can put it aside for the day. She'll be right.
This is The Night Shift. The Night Shift on the Triple M Network.
133353. Gary, yes.
Automated cars, mate. I've been to a paper mill where they've got forklifts that lift these big reels of paper, about 2 or 3 ton each, and they just stack them perfectly in this little run, and then they don't actually load the trucks with them, but they run up and down, good as gold. And also with the trucks, the automated trucks, the Scanias, they're not Scanias, mate, sorry, but they're Scanias, okay?
Scanias.
Scanias, that's it.
What did I say, Scania?
You said Scania.
Yeah, well, do you know why? Because I used to think it was Saab Scania.
Right, yeah. There's no I in Scania. It's Scania, all right?
the email that he sent, he's got an I in it.
Oh, you should get rid of that because there's definitely... There's
S-C-A-N-I-A,
Scania.
Scania.
Yeah, that's it.
Scania, yeah. Sorry, my mistake. And is that a branch of Saab Scania?
Oh, who knows? It would be, I'm guessing, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, originally out of Sweden, they used to make aeroplanes as well, jets.
Yeah, they make pretty good trucks. But But imagine if you were the driver and there's a truck following him, didn't have a driver, he was following the truck and the old mate in front fell asleep or he hit someone up the backside. What would the truck behind do? Would he follow?
I don't know. I don't know. It's all beyond me. If you've just joined us, we're talking this morning about the New South Wales state government exploring this new technology. They reckon that driverless freight trucks could be a common sight sooner rather than later. I don't know.
Scary thought.
What happens if the truck in front has a blowout?
Yeah, well, that's right. Or he runs off the road or he falls asleep. Does the other one follow him or what goes on there?
Well, the truck is supposed to be being powered by GPS.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Let me just throw something else into the mix. If one day we have fully autonomous cars and trucks on our roads and no drivers, in theory, there'll be no accidents. In theory, there'll be no speeding fines. There'll be no parking fines because the car or the truck, the vehicle, would not be able to park illegally because it knows where it is and where it ain't. What do we do about all that missing revenue?
Yeah, what's the go there? And what about the NBN? I mean, if there's no NBN rolling out, well, they won't be able to operate, will they?
I don't know. I don't know. Gary, you're giving me a headache now. Thanks for your call.
Sorry.
Okay, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.
Around Australia on the Triple M Network. This is The Night Shift with Luke Burner. The Night Shift.
Time to talk technical stuff with Trevor Long, Everything for the Man, EFTM. Trevor, before I talk to you about getting a Domino's pizza in the middle of nowhere delivered straight to you, I've got to talk to you about, once again, the NBN. I mean, it's all anyone's been talking about this week. It's made headlines. It's not going to make any money. It is a massive dud. After the Four Corners program the other night, have we learned anything?
To be honest, no. And that's why I was disappointed in the Four Corners program because, you know, I expect the ABC to do some amazing journalism that's going to shed light. Nothing in that was new. Nothing in that report was new. They spent 10 minutes at the football, the rugby in New Zealand, just trying to make the point that New Zealand's better than Australia. Then they spent a long time trying to tell us that New Zealand's got a better network than Australia, which is just silly because the New Zealand government did it differently and we've moved on from that. We can't have that discussion anymore. Fibre to the home in New Zealand is available to a whole bunch of people and only 35% of them have taken it. So the whole argument for fibre is actually brought down by their argument. The fact is, as I've said before many times, I wish we had fibre to the home. It'd be amazing. But we're not getting it. It's not happening. Move on. We have to take the politics out of this thing. And do you know the one thing we need to do now, if we want to get real about it, we need to lobby the government to basically write the NBN off. So the government has set aside $50 billion and they've given it to the NBN and the NBN has to pay that money back as a business.
Mm.
And that's why it doesn't appear on the books. If the government said to the NBN, tell you what, reduce your prices so that everyone can get faster NBN, cheaper, the NBN would have a much better reputation in the public. And the only disadvantage would be the government would have to write off the asset. And that would mean like a negative $30 billion on the next budget. Mate, who cares? There's already bazillions of dollars in deficit anyway. So the real problem right now is not the technology. It's the cost. It's the amount of money it's going to make. And that's what we need to focus on, as well as the customer experience, which is not good. And people need to get a better experience when they're joining the NBN and using the NBN.
Yeah, I was listening to Ross Greenwood on the radio on my way to work last night. And he's getting call after call after call from people who are disappointed. But the thing is, it's businesses that are really suffering. I mean, they can't operate without phones, without the internet. And he said something I think may well happen. There could well be a massive class action if businesses are going broke.
Wow. I mean, that's a massive call. I don't know. I guess it depends on the circumstances of the individual business. I'd be worried about any business that isn't properly planning their move on to the NBN. This is not something you should do overnight as a business. A house, you know what, you can go a week without internet because you can tether your mobile phone, you can tell your kids to suck it up. But in a business, you can't do that.
No.
So if you're a business and you are not making a plan today about the NBN, when it's coming, how you're getting on it, talking to your telco, talking to your phone provider, all those things, then you got no right to sue anyone. You have to get it right yourself.
the trouble is, there's no one on the end of the phone. There was a guy on a current affair last night, a publisher, and he said that, you know, he every day when he talks to somebody, it's a foreign accent, it's a call centre somewhere, and he has to start from the beginning. He says, it's like Groundhog Day every time.
I'm going to give you a massive plug again, and I'm not I pay these people $100 a month as my ISP. They're called Aussie Broadband. Their boss is a bloke called Phil Britt. I've interviewed him a couple of times. He's just down to earth, no BS, and he has a commitment to customers. He has an Australian call centre. Yeah, I had to wait 20 minutes to get through to them, but it was a bloke from Victoria who took my call. Mate, switch to a different carrier and you'll find a better customer experience big time when you actually look around. And ask the question of people that you know, what is your customer service experience? What was it like hooking up? Find someone who had a good experience and go with that company.
All right. Good advice, Trev. Just quickly, I saw you on the Today Show the other day sitting somewhere on a beach. I sent you a text. Did you get it?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, thanks very much for that. I think you said something like Greenpeace might come and push me back in.
Into the water, yeah. You were going to get a pizza delivered to you there on the beach. What's the story?
How good is it? Domino's. So right now, up until now, if you wanted to order a pizza, you had to be at home or work. You had to have an address. Right now, you can open up the app. You can choose a point on a map. So you pinpoint your location using either GPS or you drag the pin to where you are, and the pizza can be delivered to you. As long as it's, within reach of a road and it's not a, dark, a bushwalk you're making them go on, they can deliver it to you on the beach. They can deliver it to you on the local park. They can deliver it to you anywhere within their normal delivery route that doesn't have to have an address. So you can have, might be the beach with your mates. You might be at the park with a bunch of other families and, kids are there having fun at the park. You don't want to drag them home to go to dinner. You don't want to drive up to Domino's and get pizza. Just have it delivered to the park. How good is it?
And how far away are we from having pizzas delivered by drones?
5 years at least.
Yeah.
Like Domino's are all ahead of it because the Domino's CEO believes the airspace between 50 and 120 metres is the safest in the world. Nothing but birds there. So he believes that should be the airspace used for this kind of thing. So pretty exciting future, but it's a way off.
All right, we'll talk about that later on. Good on you, Trev. Thanks for that. Have a good day today.
Cheers, mate.
Just while you're there, can you believe that I've been reading Hobart out twice all morning?
I can. I really can.
It's a worry, isn't it?
They're right after each other, too.
I know.
How do you do that?
How did I do that? Anyway, once again, Adelaide, highs of 24, lows of around 14, partly cloudy today, chance of a morning shower. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no worries.
Thanks for coming, Jess.
You're welcome,
Dale. We'll miss you. Hello, Scott.
Yeah, g'day. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good, Scotty boy. What's going on?
Just driving a truck from Mackay to Townsville at the moment. Just went through Proserpine.
Yep.
I'd like to talk a bit about these automated systems and whatnot in the trucks. I think they're going to have to build so much infrastructure for these trucking and freight companies for these trucks to get into. You can imagine driving a B-double down a straight road. That's all good and well. But you get to a yard where you've got to back around corners and load into finger docks and whatnot. Even experienced drivers that have been driving for 40 years struggle to do that. So I can't see how a computer is going to get a truck to do that.
Look, I'm with you. I can't see it either. But you know what? I'm no expert. And if they had told me 50 years ago they would have cars that can reverse parallel park themselves, I wouldn't have believed them.
And another thing is, like, I'm in a brand new truck now. We've got systems you were talking about before. Like, I can set my cruise control now and I can set a limit, a distance to the truck in front of me. So when that truck slows down, my truck will slow down to the same speed as that truck's or car, whatever's in front of me, staying at the same distance, which is all good and well. But if you get some muppet that comes out of a roundabout in front of you and just darts across in front of you quickly, that truck will lock up. And it'll lock up quicker than the person can respond to be able to stop that truck locking up.
Yeah, look. The experts are saying in the future, like where the Jetsons live, it won't just be some individual cars or trucks that are autonomous. They all will be, and all their computers will talk to each other. So there's no chance of a crash. But if you just have if you just have a couple of trucks that are automated, I can't look. It worries me. Let's put it that way. It worries me.
Another thing is, like, there's these trucks now. They have a system in them. The chip in them isn't in them in Australia at the moment, but you can turn the GPS on, set your destination, and it will take you there. It will speed up, it will slow down, roundabouts, traffic lights, whatever. But if you've got, because it picks up live traffic alerts, but if you've got these other ones where you've got road workers and whatnot on the side of the road, how are they going to know who's where and who's what? And you'd want to have the GPS systems pretty good, because at the moment they're shit house. They'll take you to places that B-doubles can't get down, semi-trailers can't get down. They'd have to do so much more to the systems to be able to make it work and function for everybody to be safe on the roads.
Yeah, it's a lot to think about. It's a lot to take in, isn't it? And we can't even get the NBN right, so I think we're a long way away. But anyway, they're saying, the government in New South Wales are saying 20 to 30 years, autonomous trucks will be all over our roads. God help us. Listen, Scotty, thanks for your thoughts.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
Okay, you have a good day today.
See you, bye.
See you, mate. Bye.
The Night Shift. Around Australia on the Triple M Network. Night Shift.
Well, as you may probably know or would have guessed, the vitamin and supplement industry is making billions of dollars each year. They tell us that we're going to live longer, we'll have healthier lives by popping their pills. But what is the best science on how helpful these products really are? Do we need vitamins every day in our diet to be healthy? The Night Shift's resident GP is Dr. Graeme Maloof, former New South Wales coroner. He joins me on the telephone right now. G'day, Doc. How are you?
Good, Lukey boy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very, very good, mate. Millions of Australians spend billions of dollars every year on vitamin supplements. We're led to believe that that's what we have to do in order to be healthy. Is this true?
No. How's that for an answer?
Thank you very much. That was Dr. Graeme Maloof. And... can you elaborate? Because it's a huge industry.
Okay. It's a huge industry. That's exactly right. Look, we live in a wonderful country. I've just been away up the bush for a while. Everything is looking a bit dry out there, but nevertheless a wonderful country. I managed to get a lovely meal on the way up, a lovely meal on the way back, and anybody who eats a reasonable diet does not need additional vitamins. The vitamin companies have a strategy. It's called a marketing strategy. And they prey on the fact that, sure, many, many years ago, when we needed to find out exactly why people had rickets or why people had scurvy, we found out. But that the vitamin deficiencies that we had in those days have well and truly been replaced by a normal diet that we have at the moment. What they're doing is they're trying to make a buck at our expense, and, well, if you're going to fall for it, well and good for you, but it's not necessary.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll send you the list of vitamins that my Jess here takes. She takes about 19 or 20 pills every night. She has a reason for taking each and every one.
She has. There are lies, there are damn lies, and there are statistics. And sometimes the three of them tell lies.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I'll get her to send you a list of what she's taking, and then you can send her a list of what she can throw away. The thing is, when she walks, she rattles. Listen, so there you go. The vitamins that we take every day, probably superfluous. If you have a good diet, you don't need them. You're really just lining the pockets of the pharmaceutical companies. Speaking of which, we find out that nurses, dietitians, pharmacists and other allied health workers are getting millions of dollars in payments from big pharmaceutical companies for their services. We've known for years that doctors have been courted by pharmaceutical companies to push certain prescriptions, but now it looks as though everyone else is getting in on the rort.
Well, it just goes to show you how much doctor's services have been diluted over the years. At this point in time, a lot of the things that I did as a matter of routine are now done by other people within the industry. Do I have an argument with that? Not really, not at all, actually. But we don't have monopoly on what I would consider to be routine GP services. Now, in a sense, the two stories are connected on the basis that giving money to people is for doing, in inverted commas, work, is part of their marketing strategy. That's fine. They're allowed to market with any way that they like. But I can tell you, prior to the restraints being put on pharmaceutical companies, for my practice, it didn't really make any difference what people gave me or did or said. The thing that was important to me was what did the damn thing work? And I can tell you a number of drugs, and I can tell you a number now, that I won't use because I don't believe that they work. Full stop, end of argument. Ultimately, the responsibility, if you're ethical about what you're doing, the ultimate responsibility of prescribing or not prescribing, using or not using a particular substance rests with you and your professionalism.
Yeah, but when
it doesn't matter to me what they damn well give me. I don't care if they give me nothing. I don't care if they give me the world. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And nothing will change my mind.
Yeah, well, I've known you for many, many years, and I know that you're a doctor of integrity, but there are plenty out there. How do we know that they haven't prescribed us, for example, an antibiotic of a particular brand because the pharmaceutical company that's pushing that antibiotic has shouted that doctor an all-expenses-paid first-class trip to Las Vegas for a seminar?
I wouldn't mind a first-class trip to Las Vegas for a seminar, but it wouldn't change my prescribing habit. Look, the short answer is we don't know. Obviously, we don't know. And obviously, that was happening because the government had to come and legislate so that the drug companies couldn't or wouldn't do what they'd done in the past for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's up to the professionalism of the person there. How you measure professionalism, I'm damned if I know. But I'm the only one that's got to sleep with me at night time, and I couldn't sleep with myself if I thought I wasn't treating my patients as best I could, irrespective of who gave me what.
Dr. Graeme Maloof, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on Triple M.
Lovely to hear your voice, Luke. Talk to you soon. Bye now.
This is The Night Shift. The Night Shift on the Triple M Network.